Hello, sports fans. It's Sunday, December 15th. Welcome to Cleats by Dre. I'm Dre. Let's talk some sports. Coming to you, a little weekend edition of Cleats by Dre. It's okay, it's holiday season, just about. Weekend edition, because life's getting a little busy. Had some job interviews, pretty promising this week. Had to prep for those, get ready for those. What else did we have going on? We had Cub Scouts over today. Had 12 second graders and their families, a little holiday Cub Scout event. The kids pretended to listen to me while they shot bow and arrows at each other. Man, it was nice. Holiday sweets, though. We did a little each family bring something. Shout out to the mom with the cookies with the M&M's. Chocolate chip cookies always play well, but when you put the M&M's in there, they're nice and soft. I must have had about four of those. That was my lunch and dinner. Shout out Cub Scout. Shout out Wolves. But let's talk some sports, right? Yeah. Man, a bit's got on. In a little over a week since we've talked, and we're going to talk this episode about the newest Met, number 22, Mr. Juan Soto. Mr. Pacheco, Mr. Juan Soto. We're going to glaze Soto a bit, right? We're going to celebrate his coming over to the Mets. We're going to recap bidding war that ensued between the Yanks and the Mets on par we've never seen in this town. I'll do a little review on the contract. I'll see if it's an overpay or not. Let's talk about what this contract means for the league overall and the sport of baseball going forward. I haven't even had time to reflect too much on how he fits with the team because, quite frankly, the team's a work in progress, right? There's some more offseason hot stove to come. But, hey, I called it on the Mets episode hot stove I did. Just get Soto, whatever it takes. And they did. And it really hasn't sunk in, maybe even till me talking about it now. So that's cool. I'm going to do a lot of Soto. First, I'm going to do a little bit of college football. But we'll get to a lot of Soto later. And before college football, by the way, thanks to everyone who listened last week. Me and my buddy James talking about the Jets. A lot of good content there. I know. The sound was not great, especially coming from James. We're working on the in-person setup. I hand up. I know how to do better next time. Thanks for sticking through it. Thanks for everyone that texted me, gave me feedback. I really appreciate it. But that was a lot of fun doing that with James. And hopefully the Jets, maybe they get some wins. They can build on something going into next year. But first, college football. A few things going on with college football. Three things I want to talk about. First, Notre Dame Fighting Irish. I think we knew last time we talked they'd make the playoffs. Now we have the matchup. And I think next week I'll do a little bit of a deeper dive into Notre Dame versus Indiana, the battle of the state of Indiana. What a matchup, a 7-10 seed in college football. I'm just curious, maybe I'll look into this too. Why don't Notre Dame and Indiana play much? I mean, we play Purdue all the time. What's the reason that hasn't happened? But look, you know, the college football playoff, they got what they wanted by expanding it. They got a Notre Dame home game in the cold. Maybe there'll be snow Friday night. The pageantry is going to be great. And I don't know whether I've heard the NCAA is going to run the audio and audio visual. It's not the true home game, whatever. You're going to see with your eyes. Hope the crowd is loud. Again, we're going to talk about it more next week. My quick note now is, though, Notre Dame got a good side of the bracket. This bracket's set up for Marcus Freeman. I don't think this is a scenario where Notre Dame fans are going to be happy with just one win or just being there, but certainly not just one win. Hypothetical lines, if Notre Dame wins, I saw books have Notre Dame as a 2.5-point favorite against Georgia in the Sugar Bowl, which would be the quarterfinal matchup. Now, Georgia, of course, you know, I don't think they'll have their starting quarterback, Carson Beck, who really hasn't been that good this year, and Georgia really hasn't been that good this year, even though they beat Texas. So maybe Texas isn't that good this year. Is anyone good this year? Oregon's undefeated. I think Ohio State actually statistically is the best team when you get to advanced metrics and efficiency. They blew some good teams out. But did they really want a home game, Ohio State, after the way they lost at home to Michigan? Is that crowd going to turn on them against Tennessee if they go down early? Oh, this is fun. College football playoffs is fun. We'll get into it more. But look, Marcus Freeman, you're set up to be favored if Notre Dame wins the first three games. Because I believe if Penn State gets there, they'll be favored against Penn State in the semifinals. You know, they got the good side of the bracket. It's not over yet. Mission not accomplished for Notre Dame. But let's talk more about the matchup next week. Point number two I want to make in college football is all the hubbub and hubbub and lubbub on playoff seeding, right? Whether it's Joel Klatt or whoever, they didn't get the schools right, they didn't get the order right. You know, people just have to say something just because they have a microphone. You know, sure, Boise State's not the third best team in the country. Arizona State's not the fourth best team in the country. But, like, you got to understand, this 12-team playoff and the rules were conceived, I want to say, at least 3 or 4 years ago, if not more. At that time, you had a better Big 12 that had Oklahoma and Texas in it. You had a Pac-12, which you barely have anymore. And so, you know, when there were really five strongish conferences, sure, the likely four conference championships would make sense as that automatic qualifier. But Texas and Oklahoma went to the SEC. The Big Ten gutted the Pac-12, and the Big 12 gutted the Pac-12. Now you have two strong conferences and two weakish ones in the ACC and the Big 12, and then a bunch of mid-majors. So, like, you know, you can't knock this committee for just doing what was designed for them. You know, I believe that now, the next time they go to shape the next playoffs, you know, it won't be a Boise State in the three seed, Arizona State in the four seed. Maybe the top two, you know, get the automatic one and two seed. And everyone else just, you know, maybe Boise State automatically gets a bid, but it's not necessarily the three seed. You know, I hate the vitriol. We all don't have to hate each other so much. We don't have to debate each other and yell at each other so much. We can just chill out sometimes. Maybe I'm on social media too much. We just need to chill out so much. Just chill out more. Get off the algorithms. Playoffs is going to be great. It's going to be exciting. Next weekend, right? Friday night is Notre Dame, Indiana. Then the three games on Saturday. Oh my God, that's deserving of a sportsbook trip. Not to bet on the game, just to watch them all on a big TV. That's exciting. And a third point in college football, I'd be remiss if I did not mention my first alma mater's rivals getting a new football coach, a new head football coach. Bill Belichick is the new head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels. It's one of those headlines that, like, you saw the rumors and you're like, oh, that's not real. He's just, you know, they're just trying to get attention. But Bill's going, or at least I don't know if he's going, because I heard there's an out where his buyout drops from $10 million to $1 million after like July 1st of 2025. So he's, I don't know. I won't believe it till I see it. He's apparently going to bring his cronies with him. I don't know if he actually got the agreement that his son would is this coach in waiting. I don't know. It's wild though. It is wild, because what's wild about it is everyone's been talking about, hey, college football is not a place that those that can't recruit want to be. Like, NIL's a mess. You know, all the transfer portal's a mess. So you saw an exodus of college coaches. You saw Saban retire. You saw guys, you know, look for jobs in the NFL. But Belichick sees something here, and I was listening to a Pablo Torre Finds Out podcast. He was talking to the director of football administration for the Eagles, And look, and I talked about it. I have enough episodes now where I probably talked about something. And that Matthew Sluka episode, right? I talked about how college programs, college athletic directors need to build front offices, right? They need to be able to manage a salary cap. There's a $20.5 million salary cap coming to college sports soon, you know, because of a Supreme Court ruling. So you got to manage that money. And you're not going to manage in the shadows like you used to with just boosters and trusting whatever they do. You have to manage that up front with transparency. And really, specialization is the word on the podcast that I learned about. So Belichick, you know, he's going to specialize in ball. And he's going to have a GM. And I can't believe he actually named Michael Lombardi the GM, his former GM from days in the Patriots, because I actually thought he should have just gotten someone that was more college savvy and knew about recruiting operations in the portal. But it's interesting, specializations coming to college football. And so the traditional head coach that does everything, that's going to be a little bit of a dying breed. You know, it's actually interesting because the guys that dominate in the living room are not going to be as important in college football when you can just pay players and everyone can pay them the same amount. It makes me think about Marcus Freeman. He's great in the living room. Makes you think about Nick Saban. If Nick Saban had thought of this Belichick path, if he just hired a GM, would he still be at Alabama? Is he wondering? Is he going to get back into coaching next year? Because it is about specialization. I'll be watching the Belichick experiment, not just because I love seeing UNC fail at things. It's just interesting. It's something different, right? We like seeing different, novel things in sports. I'll be checking it out. So let's see. All right, with that, let's go deeper into Juan Soto. Juan Soto is a New York Met. It's true. He rented in the Bronx and he bought in Queens. How did this happen? This kind of stuff doesn't happen to Mets fans. It doesn't. We didn't get A-Rod. We didn't get Yamamoto. We didn't get Griffey. We don't get anybody. We got Jason Bay. We got Jeremy Burnett for a second or third time. So yeah, there's shock on me. I haven't really. Maybe I'll have to see him in uniform. Not in the press conference uniform, where he was looking healthy. I got to see him on the field, and it's going to be a joy. It's going to be a joy. And what I'll do is, I don't know, I have a whole outline of an episode here. I'm going to focus on like numbers and logic. I might mix in some emotion. We'll see. This is the kind of thing that might make me mix in some emotion. So, we'll go through a few things here. But first, right, the contract itself for Juan Soto, it's 15 years, $765 million. The Mets front-loaded it. $305 million over the first 5 years, with a $75 million signing bonus. I read somewhere that there's some tax benefits for him, as he's currently a resident of Florida, I think. You know, all the power to him, maximize what he can get. That's a $61 million average over the first 5 years, and there's an opt-out. Before we talk about the opt-out, so it would be $460 million over the last 10 years. That's $46 million per. Right, the Mets can waive that opt-out by adding $4 million per year on those last 10 years. So you could say the contract value is really $805 million over 15 years. They're big numbers. Not to Steve Cohen, to all of the rest of us, they're big numbers. But before we get into the why he signed with the Mets and analyzing whether it was an overpay and commenting on what I think it could mean for the broader landscape, let's just glaze Mr. Soto a bit, right? Let's reflect on his career. And I'm going to pull some fun stats from FanGraphs. First, a career projections article from Dan Szymborski. So Juan Soto, according to Dan, has a 43% chance to reach 3,000 hits. Freddie Freeman is the only active player projected to get more. Juan Soto is projected to seize the all-time walks record from Barry Bonds. He's one of only three current players projected for greater than 500 home runs. You could probably guess the other two, Mr. Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge. Soto also has the highest WAR, wins above replacement projection, of all active hitters. 103.2, which would be 8 higher than Mike Trout and 21 higher than his former teammate at number 99, Aaron Judge. Now, in historical context, that projected 103.2 wins above replacement, right? Very important statistic that advanced metrics look at. They bake a lot of factors in: hitting, running, fielding, throwing against the rest of the competition in the league. That WAR would sit sixth all-time among right fielders. Hey, hold on a second, right? That's not that impressive. Sixth? Well, the guys before him are named Ruth, Aaron, Musial, Ott, and Robinson of the Frank variety. In fairness, my fellow Boricua, Mr. Roberto Clemente, his career was cut short tragically, or else he'd be higher on this list maybe than Soto. Look, these are projections. And sure, though, contracts are only based on projections, right? You're only paying for what you see going forward. So the fact that Soto's 26, the Mets and 13 other teams saw a lot going forward. But here's one fun stat about what he's accomplished so far. And this comes from the great Sarah Langs on X. Juan Soto has three seasons with 30 home runs, 30 plus home runs, and 100 plus walks before the age of 26. That's tied for the most in history with Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle. That's some company. That's who we're talking about when we talk about the amount of money that this guy got. So now, how did the Mets get Juan Soto? Let's fast forward through the whole process. I'm just going to break down what I think the difference between our two local teams, what mattered most in terms of vying for his services. For me, I don't think money was a primary difference with the Yankees. And I know I've heard a lot of Yankees fans say that, oh, he just took the most money. I'm going to try to go slowly and just lay out why it wasn't just about the money. And look, a lot of this you've heard probably over the last few days. I'm going to group it. I got six reasons. We're going to go sixth most important to first most important. Number six, and this is, I haven't heard this mentioned much. I just read it in an article, and I don't think it's that important. And this is according to his agent, Scott Boras, who, you know, take it for what it's worth, whether you believe it or not. He says one of the reasons that Soto signed with the Mets is Soto's past performance at Citi Field. And I'll quote from the CNBC article that per Boras, Juan Soto's performance levels in Citi Field are well known to him. The article goes on to share that Soto's 35 games at Citi Field, the left-handed hitter scored 12 home runs, 26 RBIs, and had an on-base percentage of .466 and a .709 slugging. Now, as an aside, scored 12 runs? Scored 12 home runs? Come on, CNBC. That's what I get for reading the baseball article on CNBC. Jessica Golden, please do better. But look, Boras is saying this type of stuff. I guess he wants to deflect even more that people thinking about the money, or maybe he wants to tone down the whole family stuff that we'll talk about. I don't think that's a big deal. I mean, it's 35 games. This guy's hit everywhere he went. But hey, if this helps, good for the Mets. The fifth most important reason, I feel like David Letterman. The fifth most important reason that Soto signed with the Mets, let's throw the money in there. Sure, we'll put the money at fifth. Because it was, what, between the Yankees, you know, offered 16 years, the Mets offered 15 years. So I guess a slightly higher average, you know, per year. Also, the Yankees did not front load as much, maybe. It's hard to know because they didn't have to actually show their offer. I don't think a one-year difference, you know, is going to make that much of a difference. It was both offers were a lot of money. And what's interesting is I actually heard Jarrett Seidler of Baseball Prospectus, right? He referred to an ESPN article that claimed the Yankees offered a clean opt-out, right? They didn't offer the Mets did not offer a clean opt-out. The Mets, if they pay more, they can take that opt-out away. So if Soto goes gangbusters and gets 10 WAR seasons in the next few years and hits 55 home runs, whew, that feels good. You know, the Mets could say, you can't opt-out. We're going to pay you more. So actually, a clean opt-out like he gets from the Yankees would look more attractive. So I'm just not buying that the financial differences in the two offers based on what we know is the reason that he signed with the Mets. The fourth most reason that he signed with the Mets, I think, is the Mets' performance in 2024. I mean, this team was dead in the water at the start of the year. We don't have to recap it, right? 0-5, barely beat the Tigers in the sixth game. They came together, though. And they really came together at a time when they rocked the Yankees in a four-game sweep. Or maybe the two series were spread out. They crushed them in the Bronx. I was there. You don't think, you know, then the Mets went on and had a great playoff run. The Yankees had a great playoff run, too. But watching the way the Mets went through the Brewers, the Phillies, you know, almost beat the Dodgers, that was big. Because if they weren't as seemingly close to the World Series as they were, I don't think Soto comes over. That's a big one. Number three, we'll go with the team culture on the Mets, besides performance. Soto, in his press conference, right, said that he hadn't talked to any of his Yankees teammates since the end of the season. You know, Aaron Judge, the captain? No. Garrett Cole, you got the same agent. Hadn't talked. Isn't that a key factor in the decision? Like, you know, because, you know, during the year, they're not talking about the future together, but Judge, the captain. And I know, so Bob Nightingale of USA Today came out and said that Soto changed his phone number for privacy reasons. I've since seen reports refuting that claim. Look, Lindor and Nimmo got in touch with Soto somehow. I don't understand how the Yankees couldn't. So, like, what's going on with those relationships? And I'm not going to buy that, hey, teammates don't talk to teammates when they're free agents. Francisco Lindor's daughter was the flower girl at Sean Manaea's wedding. Sean Manaea is a free agent. Starling Marte, Jose Quintana, and Luis Severino, they travel together with their wives in Japan on a vacation. Severino's not only a free agent, he went to go sign with the A's. There was a bond. There was a special thing going on with the 2024, oh my God, Grimace Mets. It may not be repeatable what happened that year, but there's a culture there, and whether it's Lindor as the captain, Nimmo as a leader, Alonso as a leader, Marte as a leader, whether it's Carlos Mendoza, there's something there. And look, I could talk to any of my Yankees friends, Yankees family. The Yankees have not had a culture. It's felt like a stale team. I've heard of lack of accountability. I don't know. Who knows? It's all speculation. But I don't understand. That comment came out and wow. Just wow. All right. Number two reason is the family. FAMILY. And actually Soto's actual family. These family incidents that happened, these are not ones to throw under the rug. And sure, Yankees fans, go ahead. Roll your eyes right now. But believe me, like, you got to know the player, right? I guess Soto cares a lot about his family. This is the guy, per reports, that he doesn't really go out after games. He goes home, hangs out with his mom. I hear he's got 9 uncles. You know, the two incidents where, you know, someone in his family was told not to be in somewhere and had to leave. You know, if that's what mattered to him, that's all that matters. You know, and I'll talk about Steve Cohen in a second. I'll forecast my number one reason, but, you know, players dream of becoming an owner, right? They want to be the owner. You know, the best can achieve it, right? Tom Brady's a partial owner right now. Derek Jeter was an owner. They dream of equity, right? They dream of the perks. This is the type of stuff, you know? Cohen was able to get, you know, just gave Soto a suite. He's got tickets now for his family to fly. You know, he got flight plans for his family. I don't know, I heard a chartered something. He's got extra tickets. Like, you give the perks. Like, whatever you got to do to get the player. And family's important to Soto? Man, one owner knew that. And that's my number one reason. My number one reason that Soto's a Met is Steve Cohen. And boy, did Susan Waldman say it best. Steve Cohen is the new George Steinbrenner. Wow, that had to hurt. That had to hurt in Tampa or hurt in the Bronx. Susan Waldman is a Yankee staple for decades. For her to say something like that, you know, and we'll recap it, right? So apparently, you know, Hal, you know, George's son, and by all accounts, a fine, what do you call it, maestro of business, right? You know, the Yankees are very profitable. You know, and he's not as hot-headed as George, which honestly is probably a compliment. But Hal, you know, Soto, some of his comments said he didn't really get to know Hal too well this past year, well, with the Yankees. Because you trade for a guy like that, not just for the 1 year, but you trade for him to kind of, like, get him used to the organization. And I guess Hal's strategy was staying away from Soto and keeping his distance. And I guess that's respectful from the standpoint of, you know, let him focus on performance. But Soto wanted to know the owners. He wants to know. He wants to be in the know. And if you add in the fact, like, just on the pursuit, right, the Yankees allowed the meeting with Soto in Los Angeles while they were, you know, starting to present their contracts or their plans. It just happened in a stale conference room, no food, no drinks. Cohen insisted on hosting in his L.A. home, you know, the theater, and doing all kinds of presentations. And he had a second meeting in Miami. And look, I'm looking on the outside. Boris could have, he could have tried to slant this whole thing to Cohen, right? But, like, you don't think George Steinbrenner would have done whatever it took to get Soto? For me, and it's all doing is Steve Cohen, the Mets are a more attractive organization than the Yanks right now, at least the Juan Soto. Hippocrates, right? Famed Greek physician, founder and pioneer of clinical medicine. He famously said that desperate times call for desperate measures. Well, this is a Mets organization that's been desperate to break through for 38 years now. And you better believe that when you're desperate, you're sharp as a whistle. Even if that includes gathering intel about those clubhouse security mishaps that happen across the river, that apparently the Yankees brass wasn't even aware of till after the season. Cohen's the new Steinbrenner, and he may not be as bombastic, but he better believe he's just as maniacal and just as detail-oriented. And that is hard for Yankees fans, I can imagine, to take in. So now onto the contract, right? And I think it's not as crazy a contract as you think. It's not an overpay. It's a World Series winning contract. And I'll get to that point towards the end. But first, do you know what I remember being a crazy contract? Alex Rodriguez and the Rangers. In 2000, he signed for $252 million over 10 years. I remember being a high school dweeb, right? It must have been after my sophomore or junior year. You know, I was playing baseball, but also, you know, fantasy baseball, all that stuff. And I was big into the front office stuff. 252 for 10 years, this seemed crazy. Before we talk about that more, though, some trivia for the listeners, right? First, can you tell me who the first $1 million a year player was? 1979, Houston Astros, Nolan Ryan. Now, who was the first $100 million in total contract value? It's another pitcher. 1998 Los Angeles Dodgers, 7-year contract at the age of 34. Kevin Brown, who was a great pitcher. I think he pitched okay on that contract. But could you imagine if the Dodgers today would give a 7-year contract to a 34-year-old pitcher? Oh, my God. Back to A-Rod, though. I remember the 252 was just mind-boggling. It was like, where did this come from? And Manny Ramirez had just signed right before for $160 million over 8 years with the Red Sox, and we thought that was big. But A-Rod, who was 25, by the way, similar to Soto, in present-day value, that A-Rod contract would be $462 million over 10 years, $46 million AAV, not that far from Soto's. Sure, Soto went for 15 years, but A-Rod was worth it. In his 3 years with Texas right after the contract, he accumulated 25.5 WAR, an average of 8.5 per year. That's insane. He hit 300 with a 400 on-base percentage and a 600 slugging, averaging 52 home runs and 130 RBIs. The The Rangers were terrible, but it wasn't because of A-Rod. He was worth that contract. So as we look at a couple different angles here, right? So for first, monetarily speaking, we have to realize that star athletes generate additional revenue. Ticket sales, sponsorship deals, merchandise. AJ Pierzynski, former White Sox catcher, now Fox analyst, claims he has a source that says Ohtani, Shohei Ohtani, in his first year with the Dodgers, brought in $120 million of additional revenue. Marketing deals, merchandise sales, increased attendance, all the postseason game ticket prices. And you see it, Steve Cohen already is calling on Mets fans to come out and see Soto next year. Did you know the Mets ranked 18th in attendance last year? They're middle of the pack in revenue. Do you think Mets fans are excited to go see Juan Soto next year? Next to Lindor? Next to whoever else they bring in? Count me in. So these contracts are a return on investment. And like, yeah, if you go spend that money on players that, I don't know, that make up the contract in the aggregate, you could get to some wins, but stars. Let me see Soto with a bull at the plate. Stars make money. And number two, in terms of on-field performance, this contract, average annual value, it at least fits in line with what the latest analytics suggest. Remember our friend War, right? Wins above replacement. Logic has it, and research shows, each win above replacement today has a value of about $9 million per Fangraphs and other sites. So Soto's WAR has hovered between 5.5 and 7.9 the last 4 years. Fangraphs has it 6 to 6.2 over the next 4 years on their projections. So the Mets, with an average annual value of $60 million over the first 5 years of this deal, let's do the math. Nine, which is that $9 million per win above replacement, times 6 to 6.2, that's about $55 million. Really not that much of an overpay early on by that simple metric. But also, let's not forget, there's a premium for intense rounds of bidding and extra money that the Soto signing will bring to the Mets. Now, where the contract may analytically run into challenges is on the back end. Over the life of this 15-year contract, Fangraphs projects Soto for 66 WAR. That's 30 WAR in the first 5 years, and then 36 over the last 10. An average of 3.6 WAR over the last 10 years. Not as awesome, but that's still all-star level. If you're still with me, by the way, we're going to do some real math here, right? So the Mets, front-loading this contract, 305 over the first 5 years. And then, assuming they don't waive the opt-out and tack on $40 million to the remainder of the deal, which I don't think they'll have to waive that, because if Soto understands those Fangraphs projections, I don't know if a 31-year-old Soto would be that excited to opt out of a $460 million contract over 10 years. But that's 5 years from now. So at $46 million per year and 3.6 WAR, the $9 million per one more metric gives us a suggested average annual value of $33 million. That's less than 46, sure. So is that an overpay? We're missing something though. This is 5 years from now. We're not accounting for inflation, right? Everything's going up. Statista, it projects a compound annual growth rate of 5% for baseball revenue. Basically, it's saying inflation is going to be about 5% in salaries. So that $9 million per one more metric in 2030, compounded for 5 years, goes up to $11.4 million. So $11.4 million times 3.6 wins above replacement, right? That's the average that Fangraphs is saying he'll get. We're at $41 million a year. We're close to what the $46 million we're paying. Okay, if you're still with me, let's do some numbers, but let's actually do baseball numbers. Because, you know, a lot can happen from now until 15 years out, let alone 1 year out. You know, Fangraphs, they project Soto for a .276 average, .426 on base percentage, .521 slugging, 33 home runs, 100 RBIs next year. Notice the home runs are down from 41, right? He actually He had 5 home runs, I think, at Yankee Stadium that wouldn't be out in City. So, you know, his home run might go down. But by the way, by the year 2040, yeah, his slash line when he's 40 or whatever it is, 239, 385 on base, not bad, 383 slugging, 10 home runs, kind of a part-time player. Of course, we hope at this point there's multiple additional championship fingers on Juan's rings, World Series pennant flags on your kids' walls, stories you have of ticker tape parades. You want to also know why you'll be laughing at this point, Mets fans? Because the Dodgers will still be paying out $68 million a year to Ohtani. Yeah, it's going to be tough against the Dodgers now, but they're not going to be in great shape later, or they'll just keep deferring. But really, the last point I want to make on this contract, whether it's an overpay or not, let's go to that architect of those Dodgers. Let's let him have the last word, and that's Mr. Andrew Friedman, the president. He saw along say it says that you have to be irrational to win in free agency. If you were fully rational, you'd come in third on every guy, like the Boston Red Sox. Kidding, but not. So you have to pick the guys you go irrational on, and they carry you to the World Series. It's true. Free agency is a reason Boris literally told owners there's no win price on Soto. There's people keep bidding and bidding and bidding. I'd feel a lot worse today if the Mets came in third or second on Soto than the fact that they have them. I don't want to have to sit there and justify like the Yankees do giving Max Fried an 8-year deal. Great pitcher, but for 8 years. I don't want to be trying to think of how Anthony Santander and Corbin Burns, and you can make up for it in the aggregate. We got Soto. We got a corner piece. Look at the Dodgers. They were after Soto, too. Look at the Dodgers. Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. Go get the Hall of Famers when they're out there. And make it work. Make a Clay Holmes work. Make a Frankie Montas work. You got David Stearns here, right? You got David Stearns because he knew how to maximize and find the inefficiencies. So Cohen got his cornerstone. He got Soto. And you got to be irrational to win World Series. And also, Cohen always said he wanted to be the Dodgers of the East. This is that. This is the model. So now let's just see. What does this contract mean in the broader sports landscape? We'll focus on MLB because MLB is different. NBA has a salary cap. I remember seeing analyses suggest that when LeBron was making $40 million a year or whatever, he's really worth $100 million a year. And I think you could easily make that case. I think everyone knew that. NFL has a salary cap. Baseball doesn't have a salary cap. So this there's no limit. There could be a $1 billion player soon. But I'll say four things that I think you'll see now based on this. One, I think you'll see fewer and fewer international or high school kind of studs, 18, 19, 20, keep taking these bargain deals to buy a few years off free agency. You know, I'm not going to argue with a kid that, you know, wants to take a $100 million payday and just get guaranteed generational wealth. But Soto talks about it. He has plans to transform the Dominican Republic. Who knows if he'll actually do it, but he wants to give. And yeah, with $700 million, you have a lot more to give. But you know who's kicking himself right now? How about that other right fielder in the NL East? No, it's not. Not Bryce Harper. And it's not whoever the Marlins or Nationals are playing. How about Ronald Acuna Jr.? Despite multiple torn ACLs, there's an argument once made he was better than Soto, and Braves fans believe it. Well, Acuna jumped at a $100 million 8-year deal in 2019 that not only bought out, I think, at least 1 year of free agency, he gave club team options in 2027 and 2028. You know, hitting free agency at 25 like A-Rod or 26 like Soto, that's a cash cow. Teams will go crazy for more prime years. Because there's an argument that Soto hasn't even hit his prime yet, which I'd be shocked if that was the case. But it's in the realm of possibilities. Thing you'll see, number two, we're going to see a lot more Scott Boras. Boras is back. I think he had a tough year last year. A couple of clients didn't, the market didn't really materialize. They delayed, and they got late contracts, late starts. Boras was the circus leader here. Every player saw what he was able to do, get these owners to come out of the woodwork. I think Boras is not gone. Number three, I think you'll see a lot more murmuring, hee-hawing from the other owners about Steve Cohen. It started when he came on, and it's not going to stop now. The Mets' revenue-to-payroll ratio is embarrassing for other owners. Did you know that the Mariners pull in more revenue than the Mets, but pay less than half of what the Mets pay in payroll? So I'll tell you, some owners are out there running the business. Some owners are trying to win championships. Not many are doing both, and some are doing neither, but wow. And last point, one thing I hope the attention that Soto gets in this contract becomes even more a model for developmental hitters and young kids, right? Reteach the importance of owning the strike zone. And I don't mean his bull rush matador sidestep at pitchers, you know, after he spits on one off the plate. I mean his total control of the plate. He's a true hitter first. He knows that strike zone. He's a power hitter second. Everyone's fallen in love with the long ball and the launch angle. I think Soto's eye, right, his penchant for walks, is as big of a reason for this contract as any other. A hitter's eye seems more projectable than his pop. I think we would agree that Soto is more likely to be in his late 30s, a Wade Boggs slap on base type at his floor, then say, and I'm not trying to pick on him, then Pete Alonso would be to hit 38 home runs like Big Poppy did in his 40-year-old season. I think the eye projects better than power. I hope lots of kids try to emulate that eye and dominate the strike zone. And so we'll end this on two last thoughts on how this deal will affect me personally. The first, this is going to change Yankees-Mets cross-fandom for a while. I've been a straddler. I'm obviously Mets first, but I root for the Yankees against anyone else. I want a New York championship. That's like the third podcast I did. I want New York to win. I wanted the Yankees to beat the Dodgers. But this is going to make it hard to straddle, because I know Yankees fans are fired up, and Yankees fans are mad. And I think they're grappling with something they haven't had to deal with much. The Mets have, in history, have not really given much, you know, have not really won over much over the Yankees, except for the first Subway Series game somehow. But, like, I heard it, I heard a lot on WFAN. Tiki Barber, Sean Marash, Brandon Tierney, Michael Kay. Oh, just it's an overpay. Oh, they can't do that. Oh, we're so happy we don't have them, you know. Oh, Buster Olney and Jeff Passan, national writers, saying, oh, you think Cashman's mad they didn't sign him? You know, I think both teams can be happy with what happened. You know, maybe that's just me and my nature. But I think the Mets fans can be thrilled about Soto. Yankees fans can say, hey, we gave it all we could. And you can be proud of Hal Steinbrenner for at least going up to 16 years and 760 and be excited to retool and get some depth, right? Because we talked about last year, the Yankees had no depth in their lineup. So maybe this will work for both teams. But, man, I think it's going to be tough. I think the Yankees fans are going to bring some hate on the Mets and Mets fans, unlike we've ever seen. It's going to be hard to straddle. But lastly, for me as a Mets fan, it's going to be lots of fun watching this guy take at-bats at Citi Field in the orange and blue, in the black and gray and purple, whatever Citi Connect jerseys are coming, and to see him work counts. And wear down pitchers and get to know them. Get to know, you know, how he hits. I haven't I haven't watched a lot of Soto. Like I you see highlights, obviously see him in the playoffs. See him become a mentor for other guys in a lineup. I can't wait to see the Mets fill out this team. You know, and it's an ultimate. It's a thank you to Steve Cohen. You know, he does this. He literally does this for philanthropy. He says. The guy's a walking billionaire. He bought the Mets. He had a $13 billion net worth. It's now $21 billion. Probably doing nothing. Just money making money. You know, one reason I don't care if it's an overpay or not also is it's not my money. And there's not necessarily an opportunity cost. The only opportunity cost is the Mets probably won't sign another right fielder for the next 10 to 15 years. Okay, we're out on Kyle Tucker. You know, maybe we're out on Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I don't even know that. But Soto's in the, Cohen. Cohen's in the keep spending. This is his philanthropy. It's philanthropy to Mets fans. And I will accept it. I will accept that philanthropy happily. Because we're not always, Mets fans don't always get this. We don't always get this kind of news. And I'll be honest, it still hasn't sunk in. Even after talking it out. But we're going to enjoy it. I'll be commenting over the next few weeks as I do other topics just at the start as to what I see the Mets doing in the hot stove. I know I missed on a few of the pitching moves. I wanted Snell. I wanted Eovaldi. I'm really curious about Pete. I kind of want Pete back in a sentimental, nostalgic way. I don't know if it makes sense to lock him up, you know, because, you know, Soto might need to DH from time to time. But we're going to have fun. Fun with the hot stove. And go Mets and go Mr. Soto. Thanks for listening to this, everybody. If you like this type of, you know, contract and baseball talk, my episode 32 on the Mets Hot Stove, what I wanted to do this offseason is a good listen to go back to. And as always, we're growing this. We're building this. This is still a garage podcast. Send this around to anyone you think might be interested. Any big Mets fans, any big baseball fans, any Yankees fans, if they want a new person to yell at. But most importantly, take care, be well, and we'll talk to you soon.